This is a Hawley Baptist Church podcast, bringing you into a community in which everyone is welcome, lives are changing, and Jesus is King. Thanks for listening with us today. We would invite you to subscribe so you can keep up to date with us. But for now, we pray you enjoy listening for what God has in store for you in this episode, and that it helps change your life for the better, in Jesus' name. Enjoy.
Good morning.
Morning.
Delicious to have you with us. Yep. With me, Sue.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me.
Well, it's been very lovely. Hope you're all doing well, had good weeks. We are here at Hawley Baptist. It's the 17th of March today, is it?
It is.
St. Patrick's Day,
yes.
And we're continuing this morning the series of, which is called the 90, which is with the 90 days between Christmas and Easter, looking at the life of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were you here last week, Sue?
I wasn't, unfortunately. No, I was watching a rugby match in Cardiff.
Oh, very nice too. So last week, Phil talked about the, I forget what it was called, but he was talking about the Old Covenant and the New Covenant,
right,
and talking about the Old Testament and the New Testament. Uh-huh. Really interesting.
Right.
It's really worth a listen. Yeah, really worth a listen. And I think this week, Martin is sort of picking up on that, picking up on the theme, the overarching theme of the New Covenant.
Right.
And it's called the One Commandments. It's not a typo. It's got an S in the end of commandment.
Okay.
One commandment. Yeah. So looking forward to that. So should we remind ourselves what this series is all about?
That'd be great.
In just 3 years, Jesus changed the world. He transformed the way we think about religion and created a space where everyone was welcome. In the first 90 days of 2024, we are going to look at those 3 years, following Jesus through his most significant events, conversations, and encounters. So, as we journey towards Easter, let's create space to not only learn about the historical Jesus, but also meet the risen Jesus. We are continuing our series 90, looking at the life and ministry of Jesus. And we're just looking at different encounters, different conversations that he had. And we are getting very, very close to Easter now, just a couple of weeks away. If you want to know what's happening in terms of Easter, grab yours, scan the QR codes on back of chairs, and that'll give you yours and tell you what is going on. But we're going to look at part 11, the One Commandments. Now, we all come from different families, different households. We all have different ways of doing things. And we don't necessarily realize how different those things are until we go to someone else's house. Maybe remember when you were a kid and you go to someone else's and realize someone else's house and you realize they do things very differently to the way they do it at home. I discovered when I went to other people's houses, they didn't seem to eat as much food at dinner time as they did in my house. My mum gives big servings of food. And I went to remember just going to friends' house and just thinking, how do you survive on this? This is ridiculous. And we have different rules and regulations in our homes. Most of them are unwritten. I don't know if anyone does have home rules written on the wall. Anyone do that? Do you? You have it on your house? Okay. Poor Dennis. But most of us have rules for our life, particularly if you're trying to raise children. We try and set boundaries and we set rules. And those rules come from different places, don't they? They could be from the way we were brought up that we haven't really thought about. It is just those were the rules we had when I was a child. So those are the rules we have for my children now. It might be to do with particular way you are feeling about things. So it might be limits to screen time, for example. It might be, you know, we always eat our dinner around the table. We turn the TV off. It might be rules about that. But some rules are created because children do stupid things, don't they? They do stupid things. They do silly things. And we therefore have to think, okay, I need to make sure that doesn't happen again. So I'm going to create a rule to prevent it from happening. And it might be just little things, you know. So rules in my house, for example, please take your shoes off when you come in because I don't want mud traipsed through the the carpet. You know, they always, actually, it's usually just one of them. I won't say which one, tends to always forget. One I've tried to introduce recently is no snacks after 5 p.m. because we did reduce it down to 3 snacks, and that's worked quite well. And then I tried to do healthy snacks, but that didn't work. But then we went, okay, no snacks before 5 p.m. because they'll have all their 3 snacks at 5:30, and dinner's always at 6 because that's my rule. And they don't want to eat their dinner anymore. You know, children are annoying and they do silly things. We have to come up with rules to try and make things work better. And actually, our law in the UK works exactly the same way. You've got some rules that come from tradition, some from the Bible, some from Greek stuff. There's historically, we have these rules, like don't murder someone. You know, it's just a historical rule. But there's another set of rules called case law, where people have done stupid and silly things. So they make up a rule in response to it. So that case is taken to the judge. Judge comes up with a rule so it doesn't happen again, hopefully. And we have so many rules that are in the case law because people did silly things. Now, at the time of Jesus, they had a lot of rules. Now, they had the Old Testament. So we have our Bible, which is made up of New Testament and Old Testament. They had their Old Testament, which they just called their Bible. They didn't have a New Testament. And in there was loads of ways about how the Jews were to live as God's chosen people. There was rules and regulations. And the Jewish people loved to talk about these rules and about how they could apply them to their day-to-day lives. They look for loopholes. They look for different scenarios. And by the time of Jesus, what we see a lot in the gospel accounts, the four accounts of Jesus' minute life, often they refer to rabbis who are teaching, and they teach different ways of interpreting the laws in the Bible, and they have their own ideas about how to live life according to those rules. You also had teachers of the law who were experts on the rules, not only in the Old Testament, but how to apply them in life. And they constantly talked about these different things. In fact, by sometime after Jesus, probably after the destruction of the temple in AD 70, around about that time, they started to take all this oral tradition, all these things they talked about all the time, and started to write it down. And within a couple of hundred years, they had extracted from the Old Testament, most of us heard of the Ten Commandments that God gave to the nation of Israel through Moses. They had extracted from the Old Testament 613 rules to follow in their lives. And they had loads of scenarios and different applications about it. 613 rules. The Jews loved their law. And they had good intentions. People did silly things. So they came up with rules to make it less likely that people would do silly things and break God's law. But unfortunately, sometimes these laws, which are meant for good, started to be used to control people and started to be an unnecessary burden on people. A lot of the complaints Jesus had against the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Jewish authorities at the time was actually their rules had become burdensome, and particularly on those who were maybe poor or struggling with life, those people who were on the fringes of society, they were the ones that tended to take the brunt of this burden. And in fact, Jesus said, come to me, all you who are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Because his burden is light, unlike all these rules and regulations that were just being piled on people. And we're going to look at how Jesus took all these rules, 613 laws, possibly more, and boils it all down to one. And we're going to look at what that one is this morning. Now, we are going to recap a great sermon from Phil last week. Loads of people come to me said this week and said how good Phil's sermon was last week. If you want to catch up on that because you missed it, go to our YouTube channel or go and find our podcast. And it's really, really good. I'm going to recap a little bit about that. And we're going to do that around communion. Now, normally we do communion after the sermon. We're going to do communion in my sermon. It's going to be exactly the same. I'm just going to kind of be doing it in the middle of the sermon. So we're going to do a bit of a recap of where we got up to, and then we're going to serve communion, and then we're going to carry on with the rest of the sermon afterwards. So the story so far. Jesus is in Jerusalem. It's the feast of the Passover, where they remember what God had done when he rescued the nation of Israel from slavery in Egypt. And they've come to celebrate a feast called the Passover, and it's a place is packed. And not only is it packed, but people are excited because Jesus was in the city. Phil told us last week about when Jesus rides into Jerusalem on a donkey, they lay down their cloaks, they wave palm leaves, they shout, Hosanna to the King of David. They come save us. That's what they're basically saying. And they're calling Jesus a king. They are expectant because they think Jesus is going to rescue them. He's going to rescue them from the Romans that occupied them. He's going to make the nation of Israel great again. And they're going to be a great nation that's going to be no longer under the thumb of foreign rulers. So the city is packed. They're there to remember God and the way he saved them. They're excited about Jesus. And the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the religious authorities, for quite a while now have been plotting to kill Jesus. All they need to do is get Jesus on his own, get him away from the crowds, and they can arrest him. But they don't want to do it when there's crowds because there might be a riot because people are excited. So they're plotting and they're scheming. And they've been doing this for quite a while. And in fact, people weren't even sure if Jesus was going to turn up at Jerusalem because it was pretty obvious that, you know, he was heading to a showdown that he was undoubtedly going to lose. But the Jewish authorities said that he was easy enough to find Jesus. They just couldn't get Jesus on his own. But then they luck out. Judas Iscariot, one of the 12 disciples, one of Jesus's key chosen followers who lived with him, studied under him. Judas decides to strike a deal with the religious authorities that for some money, he would be willing to let them know when Jesus was on his own. When Jesus wasn't around where the crowds were, and then he would lead all the soldiers to Jesus and they could arrest him. We don't know exactly why Judas does that. Maybe he just likes the idea of the money. Perhaps he's got a bit disillusioned. Maybe he sees where this is going and he's thinking, this Jesus isn't really the Messiah that I was expecting. Perhaps for him, Jesus' teaching was just too hard, too demanding. For whatever reason, Judas decides to sell out and betray Jesus. And that's the situation we've got when Jesus comes to what we remember this morning. This, we call it communion. Posh people call it the Eucharist. But the Jews called it Passover. They shared a meal and they shared symbols that helped to remember God's salvation plan, the way he had rescued them. I'm going to look at Matthew chapter 26. We're going to be jumping around the Bible a bit, but most of it's going to appear on the screen. So if you've got a Bible, feel free to look at it. But we're going to read on here. That's what it says in Matthew 26. So while they were eating, so that Jesus and his disciples, including Judas, were in an upper room, sharing the Passover meal. What are eating? Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, take, eat. This is my body. As Phil reminded us last week, that was a pretty weird thing for Jesus to say, because that's not how the Passover meal went. In Luke's version, Jesus says, this is my body given for you. And they must have been thinking, what on earth is Jesus going on about here? Because we can read back at this through the lens of Jesus's death and resurrection. We know that within 24 hours, Jesus would be dead on a cross after this meal. But disciples, they didn't know that was going to happen. What on earth is Jesus going on about? Says, do this in remembrance. Remembrance of what? Well, surely it's in remembrance of what God had done in Egypt. No, it wasn't. Jesus said, do this in remembrance of me. Do this in remembrance of me. He then, in the same way, after supper, took the cup of wine. They would share. It was symbolic. It was part of the Passover meal. And he said, this cup is, well, obviously it's the blood of the lamb that was daubed on the doors of the Israelites that saved them from the angel of death. The angel of death passed over. But Jesus doesn't say that. He says, no, this cup is the new covenant. And this is what the last week's sermon was all about. This is what Phil talked about. A new covenant, a new relationship with God, where our sins are forgiven. And how is it going to be? Oh, where's the thing gone? There it is. In my blood, which is poured out for you. For the forgiveness of sins. The old covenant doesn't apply to us. This is a new covenant, a new relationship between man and God. Well, we are no longer defined by our sin, but we are identified by our relationship to God as children of God. We have a new identity. We are part of a new kingdom that coexists in amongst this mess and this sin and this darkness. We can be part of something brighter, something hopeful, something eternal. And the key thing is that we can call God Father, not because of anything that we have done, but because of what God has done through Jesus. Jesus is saying to his followers and his disciples that by within 24 hours, my blood is going to be shed for you so you can be forgiven of sin. So your relationship with God can be restored and that you can live as a new creation, as part of God's kingdom, and you can be free to live a new life. God does the work. God pays the price. And God signs on the dotted line with his blood. That is what this meal is about. This is why every month and sometimes more, we remember. We don't remember that some bloke 2,000 years ago died. That's nothing exciting. That's not worth reminding ourselves. We share this because we remember that because of Jesus' death and because of his resurrection, we have hope and a future now, and we can be changed and have new life. So we're going to spend some time just taking a break and remembering that. So I'm going to ask if the servers will come up. And we're going to take the bread. So we're going to also remember that Christ said, this is my body given for you for the forgiveness of sins. And maybe use this time just to think of those things that you are struggling with in your life that's making your relationship with God, relationship with others difficult, and bring those to God and just ask for his forgiveness. You have forgiveness because of Jesus's body broken for you. So take and eat as you receive it. It's interesting. We're told that when Judas took the breads, Satan entered into him. So Jesus told him, what you are about to do, do quickly, which completely confused the rest of the disciples because they didn't have a clue what was going on. But Jesus knew what Judas had done. And as soon as Judas had taken the bread, he went out and it was night. What was Judas about to do? He's going to head to the religious authorities, get the temple guards and bring them to where Jesus was about to go, which was going to be the Mount of Olives, to a garden, which was quiet, secluded, no crowds, and where they could arrest Jesus without any issues. And it's after Judas leaves that we come to what we always have in every contract, but we always ignore and we never read, and that's the terms and conditions. Okay, does anyone ever read those bits? You know, when you have a new program on the computer and it says terms and conditions, who just scrolls all the way down to the bottom and presses okay? Put your hand up if you read the terms and conditions. Anyone like that? Ian reads it a little bit. How much do you get down before you give up? Scan it. That's very impressive. Ian will be the one who's not having to sell his soul because he has ticked something he didn't read. But Jesus says you've got a new covenant, an unconditional relationship with God where God does all the work, but there is an expectation from you. Judas was not willing to sign up to that covenant, but the rest of the disciples were. So Jesus decides to share with them his expectations. But he knows that time is short. It says, my children, I'll be only with you a little longer. He had less than 24 hours. He had maybe an hour or two to try and explain to them how they were to live out that new covenant. What were the terms and conditions? And the first thing he comes to in verse 34 of John chapter 13, which you can see on the screen, a new command I give you, love one another. Love one another. Now, this would have confused the disciples somewhat because this wasn't a new command. They would have thought back to a time before they entered Jerusalem where the Jewish authorities decided they wanted to catch Jesus out. And actually, what you've got is you've got the Pharisees, who were very pious Jewish men, join up with the Herodians, who were royalists. They supported King Herod, and they were very Greek in their style. Two very unlikely groups had come together to try and catch Jesus out. They came up with a plan to ask him a question that would completely undo Jesus. Jesus would be stumped. He'd say something stupid or controversial. The crowd would leave him, and then they could arrest him. Job done. And they first of all ask him a question about poll tax and all this sort of stuff. And Jesus manages to stump that particular question. I'm not going to go over it all. If you want to read it, you can in Matthew 22. Then the Sadducees come along. They're like the Jewish aristocracy come along. They're going to catch him out. And they ask Jesus some question around this guy who, this woman who marries a guy. The guy dies, and then due to the Jewish law, he has to marry the guy's brother. And then he dies, and there's seven of them, and he ends up marrying all seven brothers. And they ask the question, when they go to heaven, who is she going to be married to? Because the Sadducees, they didn't believe in life after death. They didn't believe in heaven, as we often call it. And they thought they'd catch out Jesus. And Jesus answered that question as well. Once again, if you want to know what Jesus says, read it for yourself. Then the Pharisees thought, we'll have another go. And they asked this, and they asked a question. They asked a question, what is the most important rule in the entire Bible? We've already talked about the fact that they love the laws. They come up with 613 of them, which one is the most important? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is like it, of the same order, similar to it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these commandments. So what Jesus does here is he takes two rules from the first five books of the Bible, what they call the Torah, the rules of Moses, one from Deuteronomy, one from Leviticus, and he puts them together and said, this is what you need to do. In fact, he said, the whole of the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. You might be thinking, what's the law and the prophets? I've already said that our Bible is made up of the Old Testament and the New Testament. The Jews just had the Old Testament. The law and the prophets, that's their Bible, their Holy Scripture. All of that Old Testament hangs on those two rules. You can kind of see it like this. There we go. That's all the books in the Old Testament. Love God, love your neighbor. If you're reading through here and you're thinking, what does that mean? What is God trying to say? Jesus is saying, always go back to these two rules. You need to love God and love your neighbor. Okay, but it says this in here, love God, love your neighbor. But I don't understand what it means here. Love God, love your neighbor. But I'm confused by this bit. Love God, love your neighbor. It's like a stick of rock. And then, with the words going through, often the name of the town that you bought the rock from, that runs through the whole rock. That's what runs through the whole of the Old Testament. Everything hangs on those two commandments. Love God, love your neighbor. He manages to boil down 613 commands down to two, which is pretty good going, really. So the Jesus' disciples would have been, well, that's not really new because you've already said to told us to do that. But it wasn't new because of what he was asking them to do in terms of love. It was new because he was saying, love one another as I have loved you. Jesus is saying, you need to love like I have loved you. used to get in the 90s when I was in youth group, used to get these little bracelets that said WWJD. Do you remember that? What would Jesus do? The idea that us naughty youth who were liable to do all naughty things, before we did that, we would look at our wrists and go, what would Jesus do in this circumstance? And hopefully it would stop us from doing naughty things. I didn't have one of those bracelets. What would Jesus do? Jesus, who accepted the other to the detriment of his reputation. Jesus, who hung out at parties of dubious people, eating and drinking. People, Jesus, who saw people not as projects, but as friends. Jesus, who wanted to bring freedom rather than burdens. And Jesus, who within 24 hours would be nailed to a cross for us. That's how Jesus loved us. And Jesus is saying to his disciples, that's how I want you to love others. That's what's new. That is what is different. And Jesus goes on to say that actually, by this, by loving like me, everyone will know that you are my disciple, if you love one another. The key identifier of a follower of Jesus was not the clothes they wear, the color of their skin, their habits, their religious fervor or observance. Jesus said, people will know that you are a Jesus follower because you love people like I loved them too. So what about the loving God part? Remember we said Jesus boiled down the whole of the Old Testament down to love God, love your neighbor. Well, what's Jesus doing here? He seems forgotten that love God's bits. Well, I want to say this. I'll unpack it just a little bit because we're running out of time. Love for God is best illustrated, demonstrated, and authenticated by love for others. You see, we can have a private faith. We can have a faith that doesn't really affect our day-to-day life. We can have a faith where we can say, as long as I'm okay with God, I'm okay. As long as I've signed on that dotted line, I've got the new covenant, I've got the golden ticket that's going to get me into heaven. As long as I'm okay with God, then I'm sorted. I don't have to worry about anything else. And throughout history, the church and religious people have been horrible. They've been horrible. And they've done awful things because they're thinking, as long as I'm okay with God, then I'm okay. And Jesus says, actually, that's not how it works. You're okay with God if you love people like I have loved you. There's no such thing as a private faith. There's no such thing as I'm okay with God, so I'm okay and I've got the golden ticket. The terms and conditions of the new covenant signed in Jesus' blood is that you love one another. Simple, but incredibly demanding. Incredibly demanding. And I've been thinking about this because the Christian faith and following Jesus can feel like a burden. It can feel hard. And I can't escape from the fact that if I want to follow Jesus, I have to live my life in a particular way. There are some things I'm not able to do. There's some things I should do. And that can feel really heavy sometimes. And I can't get around that. And Jesus isn't saying that none of that is important, that you can just do whatever you like, that love's the only thing you have to worry about. That's not what Jesus is saying. But it's saying if our rules and our regulations are getting to the stage where they are about controlling people rather than loving people, then we've taken a wrong turn somewhere along the path. If our demands on people become so heavy they just can't cope, then we've taken a wrong path. The question we need to ask ourselves in every scenario, as well as what would Jesus do, is what does love require of me? In this situation, how can I be kind? How can I be compassionate? How can I be patient? How can I be accepting? How can I see people as friends rather than projects? How can I associate with people that might affect my reputation? What does love require of me? First and foremost, if you're a follower of Jesus, that's the terms and conditions. That's the benchmark, that's the cornerstone, that's the plumb line, that's the reference point we constantly go back to with every question of life, every question. What does love require of me? We're going to spend some time, I've just got some questions that's come up, because this is not, it's simple, but it's hard. You have to remember 613 commandments. Just remember this. But it's difficult. This time, take some time. Listen to questions. Be in quiet. I'm going to ask the music group to come up and lead us in a couple of songs as we come to the end of our service. Some questions. Are you known for your love? Is the church? Is love enough? Can it really be that simple? Can you think of a situation where a love first policy isn't best?
That was quite meaty, actually, wasn't it?
It was a bit meaty, yeah. I think the questions are a bit tricky. So we've got the first question was, are you known for your love? That's not a bit personal, isn't it? Is the church? It's interesting. We've talked about this a few times in recent weeks. Is the church known for its love? What do you think?
I think in the church we hope that we are, but actually when you see it discussed on the media or anything, it's always quite a negative thing that the church is always coming back as a negative, and not easily shown as being positive or loving, not accepting of all people.
Yeah, no,
sometimes.
Absolutely right. And they're the stories that make the news, aren't
exactly.
It's the times when the church isn't loving, isn't accepting.
Yeah,
that, you know, I guess there are some good news stories, aren't there? So I mean, things like food banks, which often originate in churches.
Yeah, that's true.
And things that churches do. And I was sort of thinking locally, you know, things like, I don't know, Warm Hub or Winter Night Shelter, those sort of things that are church-based. And you'd hope that those are showing that, that sort of churches are loving.
Yes.
But it's interesting, isn't it, that Jesus said, you'll be known by your love, not because,
I think it's partly, not the hierarchy is the wrong word, but actually the church is the people, and I think in the church there are people who are loving, who are accepting of all, but the face of the church generally I think is not always seen as accepting and loving of all people.
No, and I would agree. And I think it's like, because they're the stories that make the news.
Exactly.
You don't often get a lovely story in the news, like, you know, church was welcoming and loved.
Exactly.
What about that last question then? Can you think of a situation where a loved first policy isn't best? No. We can't decide if this is a trick question or not, or if there's something obvious that we're missing. But no, I think love first will always. I think, but love doesn't necessarily mean you don't tackle things face on. And
no,
you know,
doesn't always mean kind. No, I think kindness. I think you can't avoid difficult situations,
no.
But it's actually how you approach those difficult situations, really, isn't it?
And if, you know, if people have done something wrong, have broken the law, they need
to
be punished,
exactly.
You know, and love involves, you know, the judicial system or whatever.
Sure.
But I don't think, I mean, you were saying something just now about we often use it as a, just saying this in love,
yeah,
which actually normally means I'm not saying this
exactly,
in love at all.
Exactly,
it usually means
yeah.
I'm just being horrible to you.
Yeah.
We can't use that as a cover all.
Mm.
So yeah,
lots to think about.
Lots to think about. So if you've got any other thoughts, pop them in the chat. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, you can pop onto YouTube and add it as a comment there. Lots to think about. But I took a photograph of one of the screens, which now I can't find. It was just said, love for God is best illustrated, demonstrated, and authenticated by love for others.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, thank you. So I think, you know, if we claim to love God, if we claim to be following Jesus, then this is
that's
what
it.
We will be doing.
Mm.
We will be, you know, showing our love to others. And that's such a great challenge, isn't it? And is it really that simple? Yeah, it probably is.
I think so.
But it's actually not that simple either, is it? It's not always that simple to do.
Because we're human.
Because we're human, yeah, yeah.
Oh, we're not perfect.
No, I know. Don't we just know it? And I hope you found that helpful.
Yeah.
If you have found it helpful and want to share the message with somebody else, you can share them on the podcast or YouTube. If you missed last week's, I would really recommend listening to it. It was really, really good talk. But hopefully that's been helpful for you. If you've got any questions, you can always email us at gotquestions@holybaptist.org.uk and someone will get back to you.
That was today's episode of Holy Baptist Church Podcast. We hope it's prompted you to want to follow Jesus, hopefully a lot, but even just a little bit more closely. If you have any questions about what you've heard in today's episode or you want to know more about what it means to follow Jesus, you can email us gotquestions@holybaptist.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you. It would really make our day. If you want to hear more from us, just a reminder, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and you can download the Holy Baptist Church app from the Apple App Store or Google Play to hear it as well. Simply search Holy Baptist Church. Thank you again for listening to Holy Baptist Church Podcast. We pray God will bless you and we'll see you next time.